I'll start by mentioning that we have that John is a visiting teacher. There's 2 weeks of teachings that he's doing, so he's filling in for our other teachers. And so Shanka is going to be the regular teacher. So you might be here for Discovering Buddhism, or you might be here for our Discovering Teacher tonight. They're the same thing. So our visiting teacher, John Landau, is here from California, and he's going to probably talk a few moments about himself. I know he's going to mention how he knows Shanka, a longtime Dharma teacher, very connected to Rinpoche, who's from our tradition. This is also the first session of the second module in Discovering Buddhism. This module is called How to Meditate. So, in the back of the room, there's a handout. It's got two sides to it. One is about Discovering Buddhism, How to Meditate, which is going to tell you how to get to readings and things like that. It's the same as the first module if you're here for the first module. The same way to get to the readings, but these ones are about how to meditate instead of the mind. And the other page is a completion card. So some people are following along and filling out that they're doing all the homework and doing all the readings and making sure they're checking it off so they get a lovely certificate. You can do that. You don't have to do that. But either way, having this handout kind of helps you follow along with the readings. They're almost always in order. Tonight, the homework is going to be the first two things in the Discovering Buddhism readings, the purpose of meditation and meditation on the mind itself, I believe. That's true. I'll go over it again at the end. So that just kind of helps you follow along and tells you how to get to the readings and stuff, handout. With our Discovering Buddhism classes, they're, you know, a little bit less informal than some of our other classes, if you come to some of our other classes, but tonight we are going to all stand up when John enters. He's going to enter from this door, so we'll all stand up. I believe he's going to lead prostrations, so those of you who do prostrations can do prostrations. He might do mental prostrations, so not actually prostrate onto the ground. You're welcome to do that. You're welcome to do prostrations onto the ground, or you just kind of stand until he sits. So just stand up when he comes in just to show respect, and then when he sits down, we can all sit down. Any questions? Where are my friends who usually tell me what I forgot? Anybody? Okay. So, again, we just have another couple minutes, but I wanted to help everybody get settled in. All right.
Okay, I'd like to start by just giving an idea of how I envision this roughly hour and a half to go, okay? At least more or less. I'm going to be introducing the topic, which is the first topic in this module of the Discovering Buddhism series, of how to meditate. And I'll be going through various aspects of one of the most basic and important meditation practices, the death awareness. Excuse me, I misspoke. The breath awareness meditation. There is a death evolution meditation. And maybe if you're unlucky enough, I'll teach it to you sometime. But the breath awareness meditation. And I'm going to try to go through it in such a way that we do little bits of it, bite-sized bits of it, with short breaks and explanation, so we get kind of the lay of the land of how it's done, and then do it all together. So in the beginning, there will be a lot of explanation, right? But once we get a familiarity with it and we do it as a whole practice, then there will be a minimum of commentary by me, because you'll already have a basis for it. And one of the reasons why I feel that's important, significant, is that we're trying to develop a certain type of concentration and attention. And it's necessary to receive instructions, right? Because without it, then you don't know what you're meditating on or how to meditate. But at a certain point, the instructions themselves become distraction to the meditation, right? So I'm going to try to give a general overview of how one does the meditation with the instruction, and then when it comes time to actually doing it, I'll restrict myself to much fewer comments, so there'll be more silence in which you can actually do the practice. Does that make sense? I'll try to do that. And I should say that basically I'm a substitute teacher, and I hope you don't treat this substitute teacher the way we used to do it when I was in grade school. You know, when I was a student in grade school, the presence of a substitute teacher was a signal for the kids to act completely crazy and as naughty as possible, right? So I'm hoping that isn't the case here. And the reason I'm a substitute teacher is that this module, this Discovering Buddhism series, and this module in particular, is taught by a dear friend of mine named Shankar Mitra. But he's away right now. So the first session of it, he couldn't teach, so I'm subbing for him. But when he comes back, then he'll be teaching the remaining sessions of this module on how to meditate. And in light of that, or in terms of that, he wants to assign a certain reading which will be helpful for the remaining sessions. And so at the conclusion of today, you will be instructed what those readings are and how to get them, how to find them online, and how, you know, what they're called and so forth, so that you can read those at your own leisure. Okay, but I won't say anything more about that now. You'll get all of that information at the end of this evening's session. Okay. All right. So a few general remarks in the beginning. That's always dangerous when I say that, a few short, brief, general remarks, because I'm an inveterate liar. I say it'll be brief and short, and usually just goes on, and then leaves no time to meditate. So I'm going to try to exercise more self-control, but it's an uphill battle for me. Right? But with your help, maybe I can succeed. So the general comments that I want to make have to do with the topic of meditation, the topic of the of this module, because one of the questions that comes up is, well, what exactly is meditation? And many people have an idea based on all kinds of information or misinformation, and so their idea of what meditation is can often be quite skewed. Can often be quite misleading. Like when I've asked that question in the past, what is meditation? Very often I get the answer to stop thinking. You know, and I understand why people think that, because when you start paying attention to your mind, you see how much garbage it's filled with, constant chatter, right? And that's very aggravating. So you think, oh, if I learn how to meditate, I'll stop that noise. I won't have to listen to that chatter anymore. But even though it is conceivable at very high states of mental development that you can switch that off, at our stage and for a long time afterwards, making an attempt to just stop thinking, right, is a bit like having a pot of water on the stove and it's boiling, and then you make the decision, well, I don't want it to boil anymore. I'm finished with the boiling water part. And so how am I going to stop it boiling? Well, I'm going to take the lid and just press down tight on the top. Right? Well, that may stop it from boiling for a moment or two, but what happens afterwards? Right? It explodes, right? So it's trying to stop thoughts by suppressing them, you know, or using meditation with the intention to just to stop the flow of that inner babble, those thoughts, is very, very much like trying to press down on the lid of a pot of water that's boiling. It only has the opposite effect. It only leads to more frustration and disappointment and a headache at the same time. So if your idea of meditation, if what you're hoping to gain is blank-mindedness, you know, switching it off completely, then that we should put that expectation aside. But what is possible through meditation, right, is to develop the kind of focus and attention in which the disturbing thoughts, the things that are bothersome about that constant babble in the mind, right, that constant conversation, the constant commentary, that all of that, it's not turned off. It's not that we stop thinking. It's that our focus becomes such that all of that babble recedes into the background and is no longer disturbing. So even though thoughts and emotions and etc. may still come up, they lose their disturbing quality. And that's what we really, you know, when we ask ourselves what we really want, is we want some kind of peace of mind. Overcome inner and outer disturbances. And so if we can do that, if we can focus in such a way that that welter of thoughts and emotions ceases to bother us, then that's really excellent. We don't have to actually switch off, you know, the constant mentalization, the constant thinking, which is basically impossible anyway, at least at beginning and intermediate stages of mental development. Okay. So if meditation isn't turning off the thoughts, if it isn't that, then what is meditation? And I'm going to open that up for you to give a response or two just for a moment, just to see what's on your mind. Like, what do you think meditation is? Anybody? I mean, you come for a course that says how to meditate. So in your mind, how to do what? One person said how to focus.
How to analyze.
One second. One of the ground rules here is that before you speak, you have to wait until the runner runs the microphone to you, because all of this is streaming. Okay? Yes, please.
I think it's about how to analyze the thoughts that are coming through your mind.
Okay. So to be able to analyze what's arising, with the notion behind it of being able to distinguish between those thoughts and emotions which are harmful, you know, and which we want to diminish and eventually break free from, and those that are actually helpful that we want to augment. Okay, so that's an aspect of meditation, right? It's not the totality of it, but it's certainly a big aspect. And before that, a person said to focus. That's extremely important, because as long as our mind is constantly under the power of distraction, we fail to gain insight into whatever we pay attention to. You know, so focus, concentration, analysis, these are all aspects of meditation. Maybe one or two more, if you have something you'd like to add. Yes, sir?
I think it's mindfulness. When you calm your mind and you're aware of your being from the inside out,
mm-hmm.
and those thoughts that come in, they're just like, you see them, but you don't focus on them.
Okay.
You're trying to focus on cultivating your inner self.
Yeah, very, very well said. Mindfulness, staying in the present moment, right? In the here and now, being able to see what's arising, you know? Very, very important aspect of meditation practice. And maybe just one more.
Reach the mind.
I didn't understand the first word.
Reach the mind.
Reach.
Reach. Reach the mind?
Like access the mind? Like.
Oh, gain insight into the nature of the mind? Is that what you mean by reach? Mm-hmm. Okay. I thought reach the mind, you know, kind of reach behind and pull it out from the back of your head. Okay. Yeah. Come to understand the nature of the mind. Yeah. That is certainly of major importance. I think we have another one coming.
Battery check.
Oh. Okay. Well, this gives us a range of ideas of what meditation is about. So here's a way of thinking about meditation which incorporates all of the excellent ideas that you just shared, right? It's becoming familiar with wholesome and beneficial states of mind. Becoming familiar. In place of the word meditation, we could use familiarization, right? But not just, I mean, we're constantly being bombarded by all kinds of stimulus and information, not all of which is very helpful, but we're becoming familiar with it. It's working its way into our awareness, even when we don't know that it's happening. So, for example, we're constantly being bombarded by advertisements and announcements and things like that, you know. And so we get familiar with those messages. Even when we don't take them seriously with our conscious mind, we're still receiving their input deep in our subconscious mind. And so I often think that what is the major religion in our culture, you know? It's not Christianity, Judaism, Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam. That's not the major religion. The major religion is consumerism, because that's the message we constantly get. You know, buy this, get this, you know, purchase this, and you'll be happy. And so we're constantly getting bombarded with that, and we become familiar with it. Whether we consciously agree with it or not, it becomes part of our being. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay? You become familiar with that attitude. And one of the reasons that this becomes significant is that the mind is sometimes compared to a clear pane of glass, right? And if we put that clear pane of glass over a piece of cloth that's yellow in color, then the glass takes on a yellow hue. And then if we lift it up and put it over a red piece of cloth, it takes on a red colorization. The glass itself has no color, right? But it's transparent, it's clear, so it appears to take on the color of whatever it's placed on top of. And the mind is the same thing. The mind has no inherent color of its own, but it has this ability to pick up the color, the flavor, the taste, the experience of whatever we pay attention to, of whatever we become familiar with. So if we spend a lot of time in a culture or in an environment in which people are constantly using harsh language, you know, kind of violent behavior, steeped in consumerism, if that's our environment, then sooner or later we'll find that our own speech, our own actions start to take on these qualities. Our own mind starts taking on these qualities simply through the power of being familiar with them. Okay? Does that seem reasonable? Okay? I'm not quite sure whether you're present or not. Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. And I hasten to add, nothing that I say here is to be taken as true simply because I'm saying it. And that would be the case whether the Dalai Lama was sitting here speaking or the Buddha was here speaking. These are not statements which are to be accepted as true on authority. They're rather indications of things that we should bring to mind and check. Is this a description of my reality? You know? And sometimes it takes a while to really investigate to see. Because simply having faith in what we hear from an authority, you know, even a minor quasi-authority such as myself, that's not going to really be beneficial for us. It's when we turn our attention to what is being said and see, is that true? You know, does that make sense out of my experience? Is it logical? So when we examine the teachings that way, then there's some value. Then, if we find that it does make sense, if it does explain things, if it does seem to show a path to greater happiness and peace of mind, then we can practice it to whatever extent we want. And if, on the other hand, we discover that, no, that's not really for me, then we just leave it aside. We're under no obligation whatsoever to take these teachings as our path or as the truth, right? What's important is our mental engagement with it. And that's what I meant when I said, you know, are you really here? You know, are you mentally engaged with what's being said? Not whether you agree or disagree with it, but are we churning it over in our mind? That's the important thing, okay? So, meditation then is the process of becoming familiar with positive and beneficial states of mind, as opposed to becoming familiar with consumerism, violence, you know, arrogance, and those qualities, which are obviously not positive and beneficial states of mind. They're what leads to suffering and dissatisfaction. So now, there's a whole range of positive and beneficial states of mind. For example, clearly, if we cultivate in place of irritation, anger, and hatred, if we cultivate in place of those negative emotions, such positive emotions as loving kindness and compassion, we're obviously going to find a greater sense of well-being and peace and happiness in our life. So those qualities, the ones I mentioned, loving kindness and compassion, wisdom and so forth, those are among the positive qualities. And so there's so many qualities and many ways of developing it. So there's hundreds, if not thousands, of different meditation practices that we can do. Okay? But the basis for all of them is, as one person said at the beginning, is the ability to focus the mind. Being able to stay on one object for an extended period of time with minimum of distraction, so we can actually begin the process of cultivating these positive states of mind. It's not enough just to have a brief moment of understanding and then go back to the ordinary sloppy way that we often do things, right? We want to build up the habit. So that requires focus. That requires what we can call voluntary sustained attention. The ability to focus the mind continually on something so that we can gain insight into it. And in fact, when we think about it, I think we'll discover that success in any area, and we can take sports as just one example, right? But we can apply it to any area, mathematics, science, whatever it might be, playing a musical instrument. Success in any area depends on being able to stay focused. You know, this year, the 49ers stink. But I remember when they were the best team in football, right? And when they were, their quarterbacks were Joe Montana and Steve Young. And Joe Montana had the kind of focus that when he was out on the field, everything slowed down. So he could be present with the movement of 22 separate people in a matter of a few seconds, right? That was the testimony. And many, many other great athletes talk about getting into the zone. How do you get into the zone? Through cultivating sustained, voluntary attention. So, The same thing is true for meditative practices. Right? And so one of the most important basis, one of the most helpful basis for any of the other meditations we can do, whether it's on wisdom or on loving kindness or compassion, whatever it might be, one of the best foundations is to do a practice in which we cultivate this voluntary sustained attention. And for that, there are meditative techniques especially designed to cultivate that kind of attention. And among them, one of the most highly recommended is what's called breath awareness meditation. Breath awareness. By the way, it's not necessary that we focus on the breath. There's other things we can focus on to gain the sustained attention, but there's great value in using the breath because, well, there's several reasons, but the most obvious reason is that as long as we're alive, we're breathing. So we have the object. It's ready-made. We don't have to go out. Like, for instance, another object is to focus on something that's a symbol of spiritual awareness, like a Buddha statue, for example. If we have faith in the Buddha, a Buddha statue. If we have faith in Christianity, it could be a statue of Jesus or Mary. Whatever the object is that represents this goodness, we can focus on that. But that means we have to know what a Buddha statue, what a Mary statue, what a Jesus statue looks like, or we have to have a picture of it, a little statue of it. With breath awareness, we don't need to do anything. We're breathing. If we're not breathing, you know, then we've died, so then it's no longer a concern, right? But as long as we're alive, breath is going in and it's going out. So it's a ready-made object, okay? So in order to develop this attention, the Buddhist teachings often make an analogy that the mind is like an untamed or wild elephant. Obviously this figure was used because in ancient India there were, and even in modern India, there are such things as wild elephants that do a tremendous amount of damage. But an elephant, when it can be tamed, is extremely helpful. It can do a lot of hard work, right? So how do you tame a wild elephant and make it a tame elephant so that you can use its energy? Well, it's said that in terms of taming such an animal, you need three things. You need a post in the ground, you know, something solid. Then you need a rope to bind the elephant to the post. And then you need a kind of a hook type of implement that can direct the movement of the elephant this way and that way. You know, so people who are in the elephant training business use the post and the rope and then this directional hook to be able to focus, to channel the energy of the elephant in a way that's helpful, it's beneficial. Whether it's beneficial for the elephant or not, I can't say, but it's beneficial for the people who want to use the elephant, okay? So, the post is analogous to the meditation object. You know, what we're trying to bind our attention to, the post, is the object of meditation. And as I indicated briefly, there can be hundreds, if not thousands, of different objects of meditation, depending on our practice. Compassion and loving kindness are two possibilities. But in the beginning, for this practice, you know, for developing sustained attention, the object is the breath. Okay? Then the rope that binds us to it is the mindfulness of the breath. In other words, constantly remembering, constantly focusing our attention on it. And then the hook, the implement, which leads the mind back to its object, that's what one way that third object is translated is introspection. Introspection. It's like the attitude it's like in a factory when they're making an object. So a lot of the whatever it is they're manufacturing, they're paying attention to the manufacturing of that particular object. But then there are people on the factory floor who are quality control engineers, and their object is not so much to make the product, but to see if the product is being made correctly or not. Okay, so the introspection is the part of the mind, the part of the awareness, which is asking questions such as, am I still on the object or not? You know, I'm meant to be mindful of the breath. Am I still on the breath? Is my mindfulness sharp, or has it become fuzzy? Am I under the control of distraction? And if the introspection discovers that the mind has wandered, or has become fuzzy, or is experiencing all kinds of interferences, then the antidote is applied. So that's like the hook, moving the mind, moving the elephant one way or another. It's moving the mind back from any of these faults, back to a clear, mindful focusing on the object, on the breath. So in the practices we're going to start now, we're going to apply mindfulness of the object, which is remembering the breath, and the introspection, which takes our mind, which guides our mind back to the breath whenever it's wandered or wherever it's become fuzzy and out of focus. Okay? Now let me think for a second. Okay. So people here have been seated a minimum of 40 minutes already. Okay. So it is possible that your seated posture has started to become a little uncomfortable. So at this point, if you feel the necessity of it, we'll take not a full break, but just enough time to make our body comfortable again. So if we want to use it to stand or stretch or bend or twist or anything like that, and then do that. But this is not a big break to go outside and get a drink of water or use the bathroom. It's just enough to make the body comfortable again. Hopefully, halfway through the entire time together, we'll have a little bit of a longer break. Not terribly long, a little bit longer, in which you, if you have to go out and get a drink of water, you might have time to do that. Okay? So when the body feels comfortable again, you can sit down. So as I mentioned in the beginning, I'm going to be giving preliminary instructions on how to do the meditation in kind of separate bite-sized pieces, and then there'll come a time later, and hopefully not just one time, hopefully there'll be time to be able to repeat it and practice it a little bit, in which we'll then go through the whole practice with a minimum of interference. So you won't always be distracted by my voice. But I have to speak in the beginning, or otherwise there's no instructions. Okay? So this is going to be a breath awareness meditation. And basically we're going to be taking two types of breath. There's one that we're going to do just in the beginning, just to set up the practice. And then there's a different kind of breathing that we do for the main body of the practice. Okay, so what we're doing to begin the process of cleansing and stabilizing the mind, those kinds of breath are called cleansing breaths. We're going to use the breathing, the activity of breathing, to help cleanse the mind of its major disturbances, you know, like if we're experiencing sleepiness or anxiety or tension and so forth, we use these cleansing breaths to help rid us of such tension and interference and to bring in it a clear, calm, spacious energy. So when we do this cleansing breath, basically what we're doing is a very controlled breathing, a long, slow, very, very conscious breath. So we can take in a long, slow breath through the nostrils. I'll kind of indicate it by movement of my hand so you get a sense of what I mean. So when we're ready, we take a long, slow in-breath and draw it down to the lower abdomen, hold it for a moment, but not until it becomes uncomfortable. And before it becomes uncomfortable, then a long, slow exhalation, you know, expelling the breath. So these two, this inhalation and the exhalation, are done with a maximum of control in a very kind of slow, mindful manner. And what can make this very, very helpful is that we can imagine, we just feel, or think, that the air that we're breathing in is filled with as positive an energy as we can imagine. So if there's something in our life which for us individually represents goodness, clarity, you know, all excellent qualities, then we can think that the air that we're breathing is conveying that, like in the form of white light, you know, sparkling white light. So, for example, there's some people here who have made a connection with what you would consider a spiritual master, whether it's Buddhist or not Buddhist, but someone who is filled with those characteristics of loving kindness and wisdom and compassion. And because of your connection with this man or this woman, the light from this person's eyes shines with these positive qualities. So if you've made contact with somebody like that in your life, then you can think that the air you're breathing is drawing in the positive qualities that you experience coming from this teacher, coming through his or her eyes or whole being. Does that make sense? And if you haven't made contact with that, well, there's something else in your life which is very positive. You might find great peace and happiness being in a beautiful spot of nature. So then imagine that the goodness and the beauty of nature is coming in the form of white light, you know. Or you might think of all of the helpful, beneficial activities that people around the world are engaged in. You know, because for all the violence that there is and all the disasters, there's always people, always many people who selflessly serve others. Like after an earthquake, there's a lot of people who suffer, but there's a lot of people who spontaneously go out and help. Well, that's a sign of goodness. So you can think of that and think of the air that you're breathing as filled with that kind of energy, you know. And if you like to use colors, you can imagine that as a white light. So you're kind of breathing the white light in, drawing it in, so it enters every cell of the body, illuminates every corner of the mind, and begins the process of dissolving any interference, any tension that may exist in our body or in our mind. It loosens it up. It's like spiritual Drano, you know, that which unclogs the clogged pipes, right? We're unclogging the pipes that are clogged with interferences, blockages, tensions, negativities. Then, when it comes time for the out-breath, right, then we expel everything that has been dissolved, everything that's been loosened up. So now we expel a long, slow, complete exhalation. And now, again, if we like to use colors as part of our meditation, now we can imagine that the light going out is a smoke-colored, right? because that could be symbolic of the negativity that we're getting rid of, you know, like smoke being like a pollutant, right? So we're just getting rid of that. And for those of us who are ecologically minded, don't think that we're polluting the environment as we breathe this gunk out, right? Because as it leaves us, it completely dissolves, completely disappears. Okay, so we're not, we're not spoiling our environment, right? We're not harming anybody. So we're breathing in a pure white light energy, which has this cleansing quality to it, and then breathing out that smoke-colored light. Okay. So when we get into doing the actual meditation, there'll be a reminder of that without all of the detailed explanation. It'll just be a brief reminder. Okay. Before I go to the next phase, is there any question about these cleansing breaths so far? The instructions are fairly clear, aren't they? Okay. And we can do this a number of times. It's recommended, three is the number that's highly recommended, and it doesn't have to be that. It can be two, three, four. But the point is not to do it too much. If we start doing like five or six breaths like this, then it's as if we're hyperventilating, right? Because these breaths are exaggerated breaths, right? And if we exaggerate the in-breath and exaggerate the out-breath, and we do it many times, we can start hyperventilating and get kind of giddy, you know, lightheaded. But two, three, four times, that's fine. Okay? Yes, please.
Did you say in through the nose and out through the nose, or in through the nose and out through the mouth?
Okay. At this level, we'll start with in through the nose and out through the nose. All the breathing will be done nasally. If there's time, if there's space, I will give a variation on that I learned from my teacher, in which it's in through the nose and out through the mouth. But to begin with, we'll do it in through the nose and out through the nose. Okay. Yes, please.
What about with these kind that you push one nostril and then change it?
At the end, if there's time, I'm going to introduce a kind of a cleansing breath. It's called the nine-round breathing. And at that point, then I'll teach that if there's time. But I want to lay down the foundation first, and then if there's time, add more detail. And if there isn't, if we don't get to that, then Shanko will do it when he comes next week. Okay?
Hi. So when you breathe in, do you just think of like random like positive thoughts, and then when you breathe out, you just think of like the negative thoughts you're letting go?
You
or
don't
do
actually
you think of anything. You just do it.
You don't. Yeah, it's more like that. You don't have to think of thoughts once you've made contact with something which represents for you goodness. You know, whether it's the smile of the Dalai Lama or a beautiful part of nature, or just the activity of kindness that people show each other. Once you've kind of tuned into that, then you just see that as a radiance, as a white light radiance. And then you don't have to really think about it anymore. You're just bringing that radiance into yourself. Okay? All right. So let's continue, because not all the questions we have about a practice can be answered, especially before we actually do the practice, okay? Because these are things that we learn as we do them. Okay? Okay. So I mentioned that in this practice, there's two types of breathing. The first type, the cleansing breath, is a very controlled breathing, drawing the energy in, expelling the energy out, right? When we finish the cleansing breath, let's say we decide we're going to do three. That is what feels comfortable. This kind of is a preliminary, on a preliminary level, puts the mind in a good state provides it with a certain stability, then at that point, we relinquish as much as possible control over the breath. In other words, we let the breath happen with a minimum amount of control, just enough control to make the breathing somewhat regular, you know, so that the in-breath and the out-breath have a certain steadiness and a quality to them. But we're basically letting the breath happen. And of course, 99% of the time, that's what happens in our life. We're not conscious of our breathing, but we don't die. You know, we continue to breathe, whether it's voluntarily or involuntarily. When we're asleep, when we're not thinking about the breath, it comes and it goes. So in this second phase, which will occupy the rest of the meditation, it's very, very helpful to shift our perspective. During the cleansing breath, it's as if I'm breathing the air. During the remainder of it, it's like the air is breathing me. It's coming in, it's flowing in of its own accord, it's flowing out of its own accord, and my only job is to pay attention to it. Right? But without that overriding control that we did, with the cleansing breaths. Just a minimum amount just to keep it somewhat even. And just letting the breath happen. It's like if we're at the seashore and we're sitting on a cliff overlooking the ocean and we're watching the ocean and the waves come in and go out. We have no control over it, but we very often pay very close attention to it, don't we? It's kind of hypnotic to watch it, right? So in a similar fashion, we're just watching the breath, okay? Like that. There's a big challenge here, which we'll see as we do the practice. It very often happens that if there's a process that we can control, we have a tendency to want to control it. And since we can control the breath, sometimes it's difficult to relinquish that control and just let it happen, especially as we're paying attention to it. You know, if we're not paying attention to it, then it just happens. But here we're paying attention to it, so to pay attention and relinquish the control is not an easy matter. But that's definitely something that we can learn. It's definitely something that we can cultivate. Okay? Sometimes, in order to help keep our attention on the breath, to keep it focused, sometimes it's helpful to count the breath as well. And that you actually have to find out from your own experience whether it's helpful or not. But many people find it helpful in the beginning. So what that means is that as you're breathing in and out, as the breath is coming and going, and you're watching it, right, two things are on your mind. As the breath is coming in, you're noting that activity, and you make a mental note, breath is flowing in. Or you can abbreviate that. You can say flowing in. Or you can even just think in. But you're paying attention to the in-breath. From the moment the breath starts entering the nostrils until the inhalation is over. During all of that time, you're focusing on what's happening in the present moment, which is the breath is flowing in. Okay? Then it changes direction. And from the moment the breath starts leaving the nostrils until the exhalation is complete, you're making the mental note, breath is flowing out, or simply out. Okay? So you're providing a kind of a mental caption for what's happening. That helps keep you focused on what's happening. Okay? So this captioning of the breath isn't a distraction, it helps keep you focused on it. But sometimes it's helpful to have something else in addition to that to keep the mind focused. And that something else can be counting the breath. So as the breath goes in, you're thinking to yourself, or you're noting is probably a better word rather than thinking, you're noting breath is flowing in, You're just observing it. Breath is flowing in. And you're counting one. Then when it changes direction, you're noting breath is flowing out, and you continue to count one, because you're counting the cycles of breath. Then with the next in-breath, you're noting breath is flowing in, but now you're counting two, because it's the second, beginning of the second cycle. And when the second exhalation, you're noting breath is going out, and you continue to count two. And then you do this up to a predetermined number, and you can choose whatever number you want. The number 10 is as good as any to begin with, right? So you make a determination before this session starts that when we get to the observation of the breath, I'm going to observe 10 consecutive cycles of breathing. Okay? You make that determination in the beginning, and that during the practice, you're going to try to refrain from any extraneous activities. You know, any movement, you try to keep that down to a minimum and focus simply on the motion, the movement of the breath itself. And you try to do it for 10 consecutive breaths. Okay? Now, inevitably, certainly before you reach the number 10, maybe even before you reach the number 1, the mind gets distracted. Right? A memory of something from the past pops up. An anticipation of something in the future pops up. A judgment, a smell, a sensory experience. It could be any of a million and one things. And probably all those million and one things are more interesting than the breath. So our attention will naturally go to it. Right? So this is where that exercise of introspection comes in. You see, with most of our attention, we're paying attention to the incoming and outgoing breath. Breath is going in, maybe counting it at the same time, breath is going out. That's, just to apply a number to it, that's like 80% of our attention is on the present moment of the breath. But with a corner of our mind, let's say 20%, just to make up a number, we're paying attention. Am I still on the breath? Am I really focused? Am I clear? Or has my attention come under the sway of distraction? Okay? It's at the moment that we recognize that our attention has been distracted or hijacked elsewhere, it's at that moment that the real work of the meditation takes place. Because at that moment, our job is, having recognized that a distraction came up, meaning having recognized that we're no longer exclusively focused on the breath, something else has come up, this memory, this anticipation, this judgment, whatever it might be, right? At that moment, what do? Generally speaking, in our ordinary life, we tend to follow those thoughts, you know, buy into it, tell the story, engage in it. Here, we just recognize it. My attention has been hijacked, and then we relinquish that object. We kind of let go of our attention. We don't buy into it. We don't tell a story about it. We just recognize, without any sense of blame or self-recrimination, without thinking, oh, I'm such a horrible meditator. Look, my mind just keeps getting distracted by thoughts. No, because that's just another thought. That's just another distraction. We just let go. It's like we have a clenched fist around that other object. So we just relax. We just let go. And then we don't yank the attention back to the breath. We escort it, like an usher in a movie theater. It doesn't drag people to their seat. They gently escort the attention where it's meant to go. So We relinquish the attention to that extraneous object, and then just escort the attention back to the present moment of the breath. Now, if this has all happened without losing count, you know, then just continue counting. But if we've gone to cloud cuckoo land and we can't even remember what number we reached, Then when we start up again, just start up again at one. That's no problem. Okay? Then if during the practice, during the time that's set aside for the practice, we reach the predetermined number, like 10, for example, then we can pause for a moment, get an overview of how we did, how much distraction there was, how quickly we were able to bring our attention back to the breath, right? And then having gotten a sense of how that meditation, that mini session went, then make a determination, okay, now I'm going to observe 10 more cycles of breath, but this time I'm going to be even more focused. And when my attention wanders, I'm going to bring it back even more quickly, even more directly. Okay? So in that way, we give ourselves the inspiration and the determination to continue improving the quality of the attention. Okay? Okay, so I think maybe that's enough on the initial, to introduce the initial practice of this breath awareness meditation. So we can practice it now, and hopefully we can do it in such a way that we can practice it a few times in succession with short breaks in between. So we're not running a marathon, these are more like sprints, right? So it gives us a chance to focus and then relax. So, but there is one instruction which is quite important that I haven't given yet, that I've saved for this time, and that is the bodily posture in which we meditate. Now, for many meditation practices, like loving kindness and compassion, I keep coming back to that because that's so central, no matter what our spiritual practice may be, it's central to that. Meditations on that can be done anywhere, at any time, in any posture. We can do it in a seated posture. We can do it while we're walking. You know, we can do it while we're lying down, as long as we don't fall asleep, you know. Standing. We can do it indoors. We can do it outdoors in nature. Many of the meditations can be done in any of those postures. But when we're trying to focus on single-pointed concentration, voluntary sustained attention, it's very, very helpful for the body to be immobile and upright and alert. Because if the body is calm and peaceful and is engaging in a minimum of motion, it allows the mind to settle. And that's what we need, is a settled mind to cultivate this attention. Okay, so the meditation posture, the best kind of meditation posture for this is to sit upright, and some people here are sitting on the floor, some on a cushion, some on a chair. All of those are fine. The most important part of the posture, no matter how we're sitting, is that we're upright, that we're not slouching or leaning, that our body hasn't kind of collapsed like that. We want something that's calm and upright, but not tense, not stiff, comfortably upright. Okay? So one hint that we can think of is imagine we're a tall, straight tree, you know? That helps. Or we can imagine that we're the marionette of a puppeteer, and the puppeteer has attached a cord either to the crown of our head or the top of our breastbone, you know, the sternum, and is pulling up on it gently, and that's just elevating our posture. Just a fraction of an inch, but that's enough to have an attitude of alertness and clarity. Okay? And then this is the single most important part, but there's other aspects of the seated posture which is also helpful. One is to open up the chest area by bringing the shoulders back, comfortably back, not too exaggerated. Open up the chest by bringing the shoulders back. Then the arms can be pushed out very slightly from the side of the body. Makes for kind of ventilation, which is very helpful to keep from overheating. Then our hands, some people like to rest the palms of their hand on their thighs. That's okay. A more commonly suggested position for the hands is to place the right hand in the palm of the left and then balance the two thumbs on each other, either in a triangular shape or an oval shape, whatever is comfortable. And then putting it in our lap so our thumbs are coming together somewhere near the navel. It kind of connects all of the energy. So either on our thighs, if that's comfortable, or this other posture of the hands resting in meditation in our lap. Okay, so that's our back, our shoulders, our arms, our hands. And then there's our head. It's very, very helpful if our head is bent slightly forward, kind of like an umbrella handle, more or less, you know. And one of the reasons for that is that if our chin is too far up, thoughts race into our mind. And if our head is too far forward, drowsiness comes, right? So it's a middle path, not too far up, not too far down. And with practice, we'll discover which is that middle ground for us individually. There's no one answer that works for everybody, okay? So the head is bent slightly forward. And our eyes can either be closed or very partly open. I myself tend to like to keep my eyes closed, though there's the danger of drowsiness coming from that. Right? So it's often recommended that we close our eyes and then just open them a slit. We're not opening our eyes so much that we actually see things that are in front of us, but we open them enough so light comes in. And that light that comes in keeps us from falling asleep. Okay? So you can experiment with that, you know, keeping your eyes open just a tiny bit, you know, to replace the darkness with some light. Or if you're comfortable keeping them completely closed, if that works for you, you can try that as well. The only thing to point out is that if you have your eyes open, you're not choosing to focus on anything. You're just having a kind of a more or less unfocused gaze in a downward direction. Okay, you don't want your eyes open and then becoming, you know, looking around like that. That won't be helpful. So the eyes are either closed or partly open. The jaw, which is an area along with the shoulder and the lower back, it's an area that many of us hold a lot of tension. Okay, so the jaw is relaxed. And many people, even before they start meditating, they kind of massage the jaw a little bit just to help relax it. Okay. Then the lips are just gently touching. You know, they're not pushed together. They're not pursed. They're just gently touching. And then to help with the breathing and to keep down the excess production of saliva, it's very, very helpful if the tongue is gently touching the roof of the mouth, the upper palate, the area right behind the upper teeth, the upper gum ridge. And if that's too technical a description of where the tongue should go, there's a very easy instruction. Just think of any word that begins with the letter D, like dog. Pronounce it to yourself silently, and that's where your tongue will go, the D position. Right? Do you feel that, where the tongue went? When you made that D sound, that's where you place the tongue. And you'll discover that when you place your tongue there and you completely relax, it'll stay there. It won't drop down. It'll stay there. And that is very, very helpful for the breathing passages. And as I said, the reduction of the production of saliva. Okay? So the overall instruction is as I described, with the back upright and straight, the shoulders back, the arms relaxed and slightly removed from the side of the body, the hands folded or resting on the thighs, the head bent slightly forward, the jaw relaxed, the lips gently touching but not pursed, and the tongue at the roof of the mouth. That kind of describes the overall posture, of which the single most important factor is the back being upright and straight within the limits of what's possible for you. Because as we live on this planet for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, in my case 70 years, the ability to sit upright often starts to degenerate, right? So when we say upright and straight, it's within what the body allows us. You know, we're not in competition with anyone else. And so if any aspect, and this is very important, if any aspect of the posture that I just described is uncomfortable, be comfortable. In other words, you can modify your seated posture, because even more important than your back being upright and straight is that you're comfortable doing the practice, right? This is not a physical challenge. It's not meant to hurt, right? Because if it hurts, that will prevent the mind from focusing and being concentrated. Okay? So that's an overall instruction. So now we'll do one or two, maybe not have time for three, but we'll see run-throughs of this practice. But the difference will be is that I'll keep the instructions to a very brief minimum, but there's one other thing I'm going to do. Remember, the real work of this meditation happens when we notice our attention has wandered or has become unfocused, and we apply the antidote. In other words, we let go of that extraneous object that the mind has wandered to, and we bring it back to the breath. That's where we're building up the mental muscle of attention. That's the skill that we're building up. It's like a person who is a bodybuilder and wants big, round, huge muscles, right? What is it that he or she does is constantly lift, you know, barbells, you know, or dumbbells like that. That repeated exercise. Well, here the repeated exercise is building up the strength of bringing the attention back, of replacing it on the object, replacing it, in this case, on the breath. So, because my reminding us to replace the attention itself may be a distraction, periodically during the meditation, I'll just ring the gong, right? So this will be a wordless reminder to just check to see if our attention has wandered. If it hasn't wandered, if we're still on the object, then we can disregard the sound. The sound will fade away, so no harm has been done. Otherwise, we use that as a wake-up call just to check if I'm not on the object anymore, to let go of the extraneous object and gently but firmly escort the attention back to the incoming and outgoing breath. So during whatever practice we do, periodically I'll be ringing this gong just as a wordless reminder of that aspect of the practice. Because remember, it's bringing the mind back from distraction, in which whatever obstacle has arisen, in which the real work, the real skill is being built up. Okay? There are probably a number of questions, but I'm not going to have you ask them now, because I'd rather get right into the practice itself. Okay? So, find a comfortable posture. If you need to do a little shoulder shrug or, you know, head rotation or something just to make the body refreshed once again because of the sitting that we've been doing. And so do that. And then we find a comfortable and upright posture. Mm-hmm. We can bring to mind whatever symbolizes for us goodness and radiance and clarity. could be any of the examples I gave before or anything else, and then feel that the air that surrounds us is completely imbued with the white light of that goodness, that quality. And then when we feel that we're ready, we can begin the process of taking these deep cleansing breaths, pulling that white light energy in so it goes into every cell of the body and illuminates every corner of the mind. And then when we breathe out, letting go of any of the interferences that have been cleansed and completely expelling it. So these breaths should be long and deep and complete. Okay? And then at the conclusion of that, and I'll mark my own conclusion, you may come in earlier or later, that doesn't matter, then at that point we relinquish control over the breath and count, begin the process of observing the breath and counting up to whatever predetermined number we've decided upon. Okay? So, find that gentle, clear, balanced, upright posture. Think about that source of goodness, the vibrant white light energy, and then begin the process of taking the deep cleansing breaths. And once we have gently but completely expelled the last exhalation of the cleansing breath, let us relinquish, relax control over the breath, and let the breath come and go basically of its own accord. This rhythmic movement is the focal object of our meditation, so we place our attention on it. If we want to count the breath, we can if we wish, or just simply stay with the present moment of the breath, observing breath is going in, breath is going out. So thus ends the very brief first mini session of the breath awareness. And we're going to return to this practice, but I want to add one or two bits of instruction. We say paying attention to the breath. The question for us is, where and how do we pay attention to the breath? For example, we can pay attention to the breath in a very general manner. You know, each time we breathe in, there's a general expansion of our physical form. And each time we breathe out, there's a general contraction. And with that movement of the body getting a little bit bigger in the in-breath and a little bit smaller with the out-breath, there's a whole set of tactile sensations that we feel. In other words, we can feel the breath from the tip of our head to the tip of our toes. Okay? So, that can be how we're paying attention to the breath. Just tuning into this experience of expansion and contraction and the tactile sensations that are generated by this. That's a very general focal object. If we're comfortable with that, that's fine. If we need something a little bit more obvious, we can focus our attention on the rise and fall of the abdomen. Because what we'll discover is that even when we take a very shallow breath, the abdomen fills up, the stomach expands, the skin pushes against whatever clothing we're wearing, and that creates a tactile sensation. So paying attention to the abdomen is another way of tuning into the breath, right? As the abdomen rounds, you know, grows rounder, we're paying attention to the inhalation, and as it contracts, we're paying attention to the exhalation. For those people who have a certain experience, and that can be all of us after we've done this practice for a little while, we might want to use a subtler object because this creates a subtler attention. Okay? So one of the things recommended if we move to that level of the practice, which we can all try if we want, a much subtler object than the first two, is that as we breathe in and out from the nostrils, this very, very gentle movement of the breath rubs against the skin, or passes over the skin, we could say, that's below the nostrils and above the upper lip. It's a very subtle object, but if you touch that area with your finger, you'll feel a sensation there. And then even when you drop your finger, as you breathe, you can post your attention, you know, like the guards in front of Buckingham Palace, you can post your attention right at that point. And even though that movement is very subtle, you can experience the in-breath, because during the in-breath rubs against that area, and you can be aware of it. And then when it changes direction, the out-breath rubs against that area. So your attention is now focused at this very subtle point. So as we do their practice, we find which of those places of attention we want to focus on to experience the breath. The body as a whole, the rise and fall of the abdomen, this very subtle area on the upper lip. And as we get more and more used to the practice, we can cultivate the ones that we find most conducive. And we might vary even from meditation session to the other, and it might be good to just on our own try out how it works. Okay? So let's do another short sprint of maybe about 3 minutes. And here I'll give even less instruction than before, but just enough to remind us of what we're meant to be doing. And because we've been doing the practice a little bit and sitting for a while, It might not be necessary to do three cleansing breaths, if that's what we did before. One might be enough. Okay? So if we're counting the breath, choose a reasonable number. Adopt a posture which is upright and alert. Take any cleansing breaths that we feel might be necessary. Then shift our attention so we feel that the air is breathing us. And begin paying attention to the present moment of the incoming and outgoing breath. Now, as we bring this very brief practice to a close for the time being, notice whatever state of stability or calmness or clarity, whatever state has been developed, whether it's small or great, and just allow our attention to dwell in that quality. Just fully experiencing it without expectation. Resting in the quality of pure awareness. Okay. And now, as we bring this time that we have together, as we bring it to a close, I just want to offer some suggestions of what we might do between now and next week when Shankar will continue, and I will let Shankar know that he should also introduce the 9-round breathing, because it was not, we didn't have enough time to do it today. It's very, very helpful if we put aside a few minutes each day just to practice this breath awareness meditation. Even 3 or 4 or 5 minutes is, if we do it once or twice or three times a day, even that is very sufficient to build up the habit, to build up the habit of learning how to let go of distraction and escort our attention back to a given object. This will prove extremely helpful, not only for the breath awareness meditation, but from whatever spiritual or even non-spiritual practice we may engage in. So, for example, if a person is filling out their tax forms, it's a really good idea to sit, take a cleansing breath, focus the attention for a few seconds, and then attack that task. And we'll find that we're much more focused, much clearer than we were if we just entered the task without any preparation. So it's true for worldly activity, it's true for spiritual activity. Okay. The other suggestion I'm passing on from a friend of mine who taught it to me, and he called it seasoning the day. You know, I said we can do the practice for 3 minutes or 4 minutes or 5 minutes. We can also do the practice for just a few seconds at a time. Right? So any time during the day when we don't have anything else that we have to attend to, right? I'm not talking about when we're driving the car and we have to attend to how we're driving, you know, or we're having a conversation with someone and we have to pay attention to what they're saying and hopefully pay attention to what we're saying, you know. You know. That's not always the case when we're speaking. Okay. But there are many times during the day when we're not obligated to do anything in particular. Like if we take the example of driving a car, there's periods of times when we're stopped for a red light. Now, we have to be minimally aware, right, of when the light's going to change color. We have to be minimally aware whether someone has stepped in front of our car or not. But that's a very minor level of awareness. Or if we're standing online in a bank, we should be aware when the person in front of us takes a step. But if we're not in conversation with anyone, that's just a minimal amount of obligation on our attention. So it, and then there's a million and one other moments during the day when there's just us. There's just our awareness. At that point, it's extremely helpful to breathe out, just let go of whatever energy has been circulating within us. Just it's almost like a sigh. Just let go. And you can do that through your nostrils or through your mouth if you're kind of sighing. Just let go of an exhalation. And then focus the attention on the sensations associated with the next in-breath and the next out-breath. Just that. How many seconds does that take? Not even 10 seconds, right? Maybe not even 5 seconds. You might want to do it again. You might want to observe 2 or 3 breaths. But even 1 or 2 or 3 observations of the breath, which takes just a fraction of a minute at most to accomplish, will bring us back to the present reality from wherever it is that we went. Right? Because we spend an awful lot of our life, or maybe I should say I spend an awful lot of my life, and anyone who's unfortunate to have the same kind of mind that I do, you probably do as well, up in cloud cuckoo land, right? Holding on to something from the past, anticipating something that'll never happen in the future, you know? worrying about this, worrying about this, grinding ourselves into these old patterns. But if we can just let go of a breath, focus on the incoming and outgoing breath, we're automatically focusing on the here and now. Why is that? Because our mind can go to the past, our mind can go to the future, but our body and the parts of our body, like the breathing apparatus, is solely a present tense phenomena. It's only what's happening now. Right? It's only happening now. So if we can let go of a breath, which is kind of carrying, you know, all the stuff that's been going on our mind, you know, for the last few minutes or few hours, we can just kind of let go of that, you know, just gently expel it, and then relax, and we just watch the breath come and go, you know. It grounds us. It grounds us in the present moment. It's like a mini vacation from wherever it is that we go. And it also counteracts a habit which is not only prevalent in our world, but it gets more prevalent every day, and that is our inability to be by ourselves in the present moment. When we have free time, when we don't have to do anything, how often is it that we switch on the radio, turn on our phone, you know, start getting into some conversation with a reality which is totally up in our head? It has nothing to do with what's present, right? But the breath is present. The body is present. So we tune into it. And there are many ways of tuning into it, but the breath is one of the best ways. Again, because it's always there. Whether we spend 5 seconds on it, 15 seconds on it, a minute on it, any of those are completely sufficient, especially if we do it throughout the day. A little bit here, a little bit there. This will build up the habit. The habit of bringing the mind back from its distraction and focusing on a given object. And then we'll find out that this practice, and it is a practice, like practicing the violin, builds up this skill of attention, and as it gets stronger, we'll be able to apply it to anything, worldly activities and spiritual activities such as meditation on loving kindness, compassion, and all of the other aspects of the spiritual path. Okay? So then when we finish the practice, just like we finished this short set of practices today, we can think if there's any value in making this effort to observe the nature of the mind and cultivate sustained attention, then may we dedicate it so that all beings experiencing confusion in their mind and the various set feelings of uneasiness and disturbance that follows from that, may they win freedom from all such distractions and in their place cultivate the positive qualities of sustained attention and all of the other positive qualities that are built on that, so that we may find a real source of refuge and benefit not only for ourselves but for others as well. Okay. So, you've shown a lot of patience for this, and you've had to put up with the fact that I didn't cover all of the things I wanted to cover, but I think, especially if we follow over the next week by remembering the instructions and doing a few seconds here and there, seasoning the day with the practice, and then when we have a chance, like maybe in the early morning before we start getting into the activities of the day, do something a little bit longer, like 2 or 3 minutes, right? And maybe in the evening when the day has come to an end, we do a little bit. I think when Shankar comes next week to give the second session, you'll all be master meditators and be able to take off like a rocket ship. Okay. Yes, please. What we're doing is we're building up the mental capacity for clearly observing. The foot went asleep? Maybe you can pull on the ball of your foot. Will that undo it?
When I stood off my leg.
No, what I mean now, to get rid of the cramp. If you pull on the ball of your foot, pull it up. Okay. Okay, good. Yeah, so we're building up the habit of being able to pay attention without always buying in, you know, observing. Yes, that's very helpful. Okay, folks. Thank you. Oh, wait a minute. There was an announcement that
I actually announced the homework at the beginning. So it's the first two readings in Discovering Buddhism. Everything's in the handout. If you have any questions about that particular thing, let me know.
Okay. You got that?
Thank you.
Thank you, dear.